Hello and welcome to From Fear to Fire, secrets to overcome fear, embrace your gifts, and achieve success. This is the place where real people share real challenges and where you can find a common bond and uncommon wisdom through their journeys to help you move from fear to fire. I am Heather Hansen O'Neill. I am your host. And today's quote is by Nelson Mandela. The brave man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he who conquers that fear. We've got an amazing guest for you today, and I am so excited to share with you. So when Robert Andres was young, his family told him a version of, you can achieve anything you want to achieve no matter where you are right now. And that's exactly what he continues to believe and create. Traveling gave him an ideal vantage point to observe common mistakes and successes in businesses. On a worldwide scale, his mindset has helped him to build an empire of 8 businesses generating 7 figures yearly, to travel over 100,000 miles, visiting 17 countries, speaking in front of thousands of people in 3 different languages, all while maintaining loving relationships. This is what we all want, right? Throughout the years, he's delivered over 200 projects to clients in 19 different sectors, generating over $500 million in business value for them. At the core, what he does is he helps ethical organizations get to the next level. That's a simple way to put it, right? Let's hear from Robert. Welcome. How are you today, Robert?
Thank you so much for having me. I feel amazing.
Well, good. I'm so happy to hear it. You know, I wanted to go back for a moment before we dive into any of the business or any of the fear that we might be talking about helping people overcome. I want to go back to your beginning. Now, I didn't mention it here, but you were born into a modest family in a very small town in Transylvania, Romania, and you lived on farms and cared for livestock. So how did that hard work help to define you?
I believe I was very blessed to have been born in that circumstance, because something that was ingrained in our minds, both my and my brothers, is that if we want something to get done, we need to do it, right? If you would be thirsty, you would need to go to the well to get water. If you would be hungry, you would need to pick an apple or go, get eggs from the chicken, or, you know, do whatever. Like, you would actually need to sort of fend for yourself, because all of your family is on the farm somewhere. It's like no one's just sitting around caring for you. And this is something that my wife and I talk about all the time, because when we see parents nowadays being confused about, you know, what else should I do with my children? What else should I do with my, I'm like, we were alone almost all the time. And we had no problem with that, right? Like, we're still alive. You know, we are very well off as far as, you know, by most standards. We've shifted, I don't know how many social statuses, you know, since then. It's like, you don't always need to be with your children. Let them be bored, you know, like, let them figure out, let them use their imagination, let them, you know, do something. I remember, we always laugh about this. Final thing I'm going to say is that sometimes we see people in groups, like mothers groups on Facebook or whatever, and say, what should I do with my children because they're bored, or things like that. And we tell ourselves, like, we would never go to our parents to tell them we are bored, because what they would do is like, oh, you're bored, here's a broom, go, you know,
here's chores.
Chores. You would always get chores. They say, yes. Oh, you're bored, no problem, wash the dishes. Ah, no problem, go, you know, make the fire. I don't know, something, like, they would always give you something. And I kid you not, many times you would engage with your parents just so that you spend time with them. Like, they would be busy doing something like cooking food, and my wife would literally spend time with her mom cooking food, right? That's what they would do together. That was the activity. I would, with my mom, I still remember, we would peel things off of legumes and vegetables, because you would put them for winter, right? So I remember spending hours with my mom just peeling things and just having great, great conversations, right? And again, we were never bored. Like, you would always have something to do. And so that's where I come from. And I think I'm very blessed to have had that upbringing.
I love that so much. And as someone whose sons are now venturing out into the world, you know, there were times I'm like, oh, I probably protected a little too much. I probably gave a little too much. And, you know, and now the strings, I'm like, nope, I'm not getting the strings. But yeah. it is a gift. It really is a gift to give our people, our children, the ability to create, the ability to figure things out on their own. So I love that beginning. Thank you so much. You know, we want to, for this episode, we want to dive into the fear. We want to roll around in it a little bit, hear some stories about it, and get some advice from Robert on how to overcome it. So let's see, where do we begin? So how do you overcome the fear of being wrong? Have you ever felt that?
I think anyone that is on the cusp of leadership, like they have to take risks, they have to do things that haven't been done before, or someone expects of them, whether that's their clients or that's their bosses, or anyone expects of them to keep giving better and better results or better products and so on, you always need to make moves. And so when you make those moves, it's clear that you've never done this before. Because if you would have, like, there is no reality in which a CEO or an entrepreneur or any manager has done everything before. That reality doesn't exist. You're always put into a place of at the edge of your capability, typically, right? Very few people stay in a job where they're incredibly overqualified. You're typically in a job where you're qualified and on the edge of that qualification. So because you're on the edge of the qualification, and all entrepreneurs are, or all C-suite or all managers are, then basically you need to sort of understand that you're going to be right a certain amount of times, and you're going to be wrong a certain amount of times. Mm-hmm. And so the way to get over the fear of being wrong is by getting data on everything you do. So whenever you do something, let's say you say you're a marketing officer, right? You're a C-suite marketing officer in the company. And so you want to test email outreach and say, okay, let's test email outreach. It's going to cost us, I don't know, $4,000, whatever. I'm making this up. And then that can work or that can fail. And then next month you can do something else and so on. The only way you're never going to succeed, or you have a chance of eventually failing, is if you don't measure what you're doing. Because mm-hmm. if you measure what you do, like if you focus on those measurements, you say, okay, who are we reaching out to? We're reaching out to exactly, you know, people in procurement at, you know, technology companies in New York, you know, blah, blah, blah. Like you have every single thing nailed down. Like this is the exact target. This is the exact message. This is the exact medium. And this is the amount of emails we're going to send. And then you hit go, or you say, okay, let's do this. Like you hit go. And then you see after 24 hours, did anyone reply, right, to the first few hundred emails going out? Okay, no one replied. After 48 hours, did anyone reply? No one replied still. Okay, let's say we may wait one more day, 72 hours. Did anyone reply? No one. Stop the campaign immediately. Let's change. Let's use a different angle. Let's do something else, right? We many times work with vendors that change things up, you know, every other week. You know, like they let things run for like 2 weeks, saying like, oh, there's not enough data, not enough time has passed. And like, what are you talking about? When I get an amazing email from someone, maybe I don't see it day one. Maybe I don't see it day two. Impossible I don't see it after 3 days, right? I have to see it after 3 days. So someone needs to open it and, you know, reply. And if they don't, then there's a problem. Intrinsically, there's a problem. If you've reached out to enough hundreds of people, if you reached out to only 10 people, then it doesn't really matter. You don't have statistical data to prove you're wrong yet, right? If you reached out to 300 people and after 3 days, no one said anything, you know, there's a problem somewhere, right? You can just take the decision. There's a problem somewhere. Let me fix it, right? And so what you can do is you can keep being very focused on testing, right? And so by the end of that month, you have data to tell you, this specific message to this our target audience with this medium works. Yes. Or worst case scenario, you can say these five things do not work. So we're never going to make the same mistake again because we're documenting that. We have the information and we're documenting it. So regardless, I am adding business value to my business because now anyone would have taken the same assumption, like because the assumptions were not by default flawed. The assumptions were okay, right? This is the assumption. This is what we sell. This is who we're selling it to. This is why they buy. So let's test if we can do this in the cold market, right? So the assumption is correct. But then when you get to results, it may or may not be correct exactly the way you did it. So then you can, you know, play around with it. So basically what you can go to your clients with or your C-suite with, right? Or your, what's it called? Your colleagues is that, hey, this is what we've tried. This is where we've written down what we've tried. So this is what we're going to try next. And then you keep doing that over and over and over again. And if you are a little bit smart about, hey, let's tweak this, let's tweak that, let's see what other people are doing, you know, and so on and so forth, you'll succeed eventually, right? It might take you 3 months or whatever. I remember we had a client at one point in one of our businesses. We were doing outreach for them. We worked for them for 3 months. And I kid you not, they got almost nothing. And so we said, this is almost impossible, right? Well, how could you do so much work in 3 months and you get almost nothing? I kid you not, what we did one change, it shifted forever. So in 3 months, I think they got maybe, I don't know, 5 leads, something like that. They should have gotten many more in 3 months. And so we shifted something in month 4 that took them from, let's say, 2 leads per month, I kid you not, to 40 leads in month 4. 40 right. leads they got in month 4. And the client was shocked. They were having so many meetings, like they couldn't take all of the number of meetings, right? They're like, oh my gosh, guys, you finally cracked it. So what we did, I kid you not, the one thing we did is we changed from email to LinkedIn. We did the exact same thing, the exact same people, the exact same message, only we did it through LinkedIn, not through emails. Mm. Boom, like the meeting started skyrocketing, right? Mm. The same thing if we would have done for another company, it wouldn't have worked. LinkedIn wouldn't have worked. Emails would have worked. It doesn't matter what worked for other companies. The only thing that matters is let's spend time together to realize what you need to do in your specific case for it to work for you. And if we need to spend a few months to do that, so be it, right? So this is how I eventually overcame the fear of being wrong. Because before, I'm very careful of my clients' money. Whenever someone pays us to do, whether technology or marketing or operations, we run businesses for other people sometimes. So whenever someone pays us, what I'm thinking is, oh my gosh, we didn't succeed. I'm, you know, imposter syndrome kicks in, you know, like, what did I do wrong? And so on and so forth. And then I think, you know what? No one would have done better with the information that they had. Like with the limited amount of information, this was the best outcome for now. And so let's see, this is what I can give you. Anyone that's reasonable in business will understand some plans fail, some plans succeed. What they want to see is that you're actually improving based on your failure. And so this is how I finally overcame the fear of being wrong in business and outside of business. I say, okay, what's my data? Based on this data, this is the most accurate decision I can come up to right now. And then I say, I can be wrong. And that's it. And just accepting that I can be wrong, but if I am wrong, I will take note of why I was wrong and try to never do it again. I already feel so much better. I sleep well at night. You know, it just changes my world completely.
Oh, that's awesome. I love this. This is so important. And it actually leads me to my next question. So we have a lot of leaders who are listening, maybe a few of them who like control. So let's talk about the fear of relinquishing that control. When you have people who are, you know, managers, or you've got a team, and it's their job to do the job, their job to fail, to get the data so that they can learn the lesson, so they can become better. So what can you tell our listeners to help them with that?
So there's something that's very important here, that the moment I made that mental shift I kid you not, everything in my life became easier. And the moment I help others make that shift, like they truly understand it and they truly go into that mindset, they just scale like there's no tomorrow once they understand it. So everyone in the leadership position thinks that they are responsible, as you said, for getting the job done, for doing the work, the doing, the tasks, the like what is being done. Everyone believes that's what they are responsible for. However, what they fail to see is that every single person in a leadership position is responsible for their teams to get a specific outcome. That's it. That's what they're responsible for, not them to get the outcome. It's not my responsibility to grow my business from 5 million a month to 5.5 million a month, right? To a 10% increase month over month. That's not my responsibility. It's my team's responsibility to do that. What I need to do is find the right team, give them the right coaching, support them as the leader, make it easy for them to do work they love, and so get out of their way when I need to get out of their way, right? So shifting this in your brain literally helps you finally shift your agenda, because that's basically it. It's like, how do you use your time? Do you use your time creating contracts or reviewing contracts, or do you use your time teaching people how to create contracts and then how to review those contracts, right? Because if you are a bottleneck in any way to your business, the business growth will eventually stop where you are. It will stop because you only have 8 hours a day, or however much you spend productively to work, right? Everything else stops there. You eventually need to go home to your children or to your spouse or to whatever, to your hobby. It doesn't matter. You eventually need a break, regardless, right? And so, because of that, anything that is dependent on you is a bottleneck. So, the way I see it, if anything needs to come back to me for it to progress, I am failing my business. I'm effectively failing my business because I have to be there. And what we call it in the M&A industry, in the mergers and acquisitions, because we do a lot of those, we call that key person dependency. So as long as you have key person dependency, and guess what? You are that person, a fundamental flaw in the business. So you are doing a disservice to your business. So the moment you understand these two concepts, I kid you not,
Huge.
everything shifts in your brain, because now all of a sudden you don't take credibility and you don't take like pride when you help someone like achieve something, like, oh, I checked this, I sent this email, I did that. I do not take pride in none of that. If I need to do work, I know I failed my team today. If I actually need to do work, this might sound like I'm lazy, but what I am actually doing is I am empowering every single unit in my business to function better without me than with me. And if I succeed in that goal, my business will just grow and my team will just grow, and everyone will say, oh my God, Robert, we couldn't do it without you. And I'm there, I'm like, are you serious? I did nothing. I'd like, you did everything here. Like, yes, Robert, but you were there, you helped us, you pushed us, you did this, you did that. I'm so happy I have the privilege of being on your team. Like, this is what I tell my team. I'm so privileged to have you guys, and I'm so privileged that you guys really want to be better, to grow, to expand, and so on and so forth. It's not easy to find teams like that, but sometimes you do. And then when you find them, you latch onto them. If they have a bad day, you say, take the day off. Please take the day off. I need you tomorrow, right? If they have a bad month, you're like, let me help you. Let's work on this together. Let's figure this out. Because sometimes that happens. Sometimes you go through loss. Sometimes you go through heartache. Sometimes, you have an accident. Sometimes your children have an accident. Sometimes who knows what happens, right? And then you
We're
need to be
humans,
there for
yes.
them. Yeah, it's life. You're right. This is life. But you take the person for what they are holistically and say, this is the person I want on my team, right? Whether that's like because people hire us to be an exterior team working alongside theirs, right? So they bring us in, like let's say they already have a sales team, they bring us in to generate leads, or they already have an ops team or leadership, they bring us in to do management so that we check the books, we check the contracts, we check the billables, we do the agendas. We like everything that they don't want to do that needs to be done, you know, like we just do for them. So this is what we do for people. And then based on that, whenever someone comes to us, we tell them, there is no guarantee that you and I will succeed together. The only thing that's a guarantee is that we will do our best. And if you can guarantee that you will do your best, we have a very high chance of success. That's it. That's all that there is, right? Nothing else you can do.
You can do this. I love not just the fact that your content is spot on, but I love you're passionate about it because that's what's important. Like, you know, firsthand, you've done this, and it's exciting when you see how the team responds and the results that you get when you do it this way. I love it so much. This is fantastic. Now, I could go down a path of asking you a bunch more questions about fear, and I may come back to it. But before we started the show, you were talking about some really interesting new projects. And I would like you to share, because you and I have something in common. We believe in the power of businesses and people to do good for something that's bigger than them, right? So you specifically, you want to work with ethical organizations that want to do the right things. I want to help people to expand what they do to make a difference in the world, right? We both want the same things here. So there were two that you were mentioning that I really would love for you to share with our listeners. One had to do with something with the UN helping women, and the other one had to do with healthcare in Africa. So you can either, depending on how long the stories are, you can choose one or you can give me both. What do you think?
I can give you both, and I can even include a third. So,
awesome.
Let me be short, succinct, and to make sure people understand. So a little over a year ago, I had the opportunity to meet someone in the US that works with human rights. So every so often I'm on LinkedIn, I see a cool post someone posted or whatever, and I connect. I said, hey, would love to ask a few questions, or would love to have you to network, or, you know, to just talk. I kid you not, people get held back by this. Like, what do you mean you just want to talk? I don't get it. Like, what do you want to sell? I'm like, I don't want to sell anything. I just really want, I find your profile interesting, and I really just want to talk. And so one of these people indulged me with their time, right? And they happen to be the founder of an organization that's a law firm that only takes on human rights cases. That's all they do. They don't do anything else, right? And so what they do is, for example, recently, they literally just came back less than a day ago from Grenada. They're in UN Women's. They were at that conference. They were working with UN, the United Nations, to implement change in the legal approach of how women are being treated in the country, right? And so huge, if they succeed, huge positive impact, right? Tens of thousands of women, it's a very small country, so that's why I'm saying tens of thousands, but literally tens of thousands of women will benefit from that, right, immediately. And so not just that, because this is one case of five other cases that they've won this year. So he keeps telling me about all of these cool things, and I keep telling him about the cool projects I'm working on, and we just, you know, vibe very well. And at one point, he's like, Robert, we would really love to expand, you know, our capability. We would like to get more lawyers, but obviously we can't afford them, you know, because, I mean, we need to be very picky with what we work on and so on. I'm like, okay, but why don't you grow your audience? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And like, Robert, we've tried, we've been burned before, and blah, 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 and so on. And like, you know what? Give me some time. Let me figure this out. And then I put together, you know, a proposal for them as a nonprofit, as a charity. I'm like, okay, this is what I think we could do together. And they loved it, right? And so that's basically how we can help this organization leave a huge positive impact for human rights globally, right? And then another thing, in Africa, we've gotten introduced to one of the countries in Africa. I'm under NDA in all of these, so I can't say names, but
yes, I understand.
A country in Africa wants that. They don't have a national health system. They literally do not. So they're like, okay, we need a national health system. And we've already built national health systems in IT, I mean, it's like engineering. We one of my companies is an engineering company, and we just build anything that's the more complicated, the better, you know. And so we've already built health systems in Latin America, and we've already built dozens of health systems. We've even worked with Stanford in the US, right, to build some very cool apps for them and so on. So basically, they reached us, right? And so now we're in that process of discussing with them, what are their needs and what do they do and so on and so forth. Again, a project that if we take on, it's going to take years to build, but it's going to help millions of people in the country, you know, get the healthcare that they want and need, right? And so that's a very cool thing. So the first example was in marketing and growth, you know, growing one company. The second example is in IT, is in management, is in everything that has to do with systems. And then the third example, I can give you a company in Chicago that has clinics, had issues with their chiefs of operation because clinics are very regulated, right? Like you have to do things in a very specific way every single time. And it's so much work, hundreds and hundreds of patients, but things were getting lost. Patient data was getting lost. You know, patients didn't know when they need to come in next. And, you know, deals were being lost left and right. And people weren't getting healthcare, the right type of quality of healthcare and so on. So we were like, okay, I know this guy as well for a couple of years. He is an amazing fellow, has helped millions and millions of people in the US. And so I'm like, you know what? Let me rent out my my own admin team to you, because my admin team manages all of my 8 businesses. So like, let me rent them out to you, and then they can manage your businesses as well. And so we started doing that. I kid you not, in the very first month of my team working with him, we already made more money for him than our entire year of, you know, how much it costs for him to work with us, you know? And so because of the operational effectiveness we've now brought into the game. And so now all of a sudden, thousands and thousands of patients are getting better healthcare, a better experience, and so on and so forth because of what we were able to do. And so these are the three main areas where we help. We used to do a lot of coaching in the past, but then we realized people don't have time. Like, they already know what they need to do. What they actually need is someone to say, okay, guide me, make sure I'm on the right path, number one. And then number two, help me execute on the strategy. And so that's what we focus on nowadays.
Wow. I love this. And that, you know, I think that when you come into business from a heart-centered place, wanting to make a difference with a lot of different people, the money will come, right? The money comes. It's secondary from an intentional purpose, but I think that this is beautiful. And I'd love to hear more of these stories, but of course, as it works, 30 minutes goes really fast. So it's time for you to please share with our listeners how they might be able to get a hold of you. What's the best way if they have some questions, if they have an idea, and they want to learn a little bit more about you?
Sure. So right now, if anyone Googles my name, my full name, Robert Indriesh, the first 3 pages of Google should be about me, shouldn't be an issue, right? They could find me. I also have a domain, robertindriesh.com. And anyone that has any questions or wants to hop on a call or things of that nature, they can email me at robertindriesh.com. And they just need to mention your name or the podcast name or anything of the such. And if they do, I promise I will reply.
Thank you, Robert. And I'm going to publicly apologize to you because I realize when you say it so beautifully, I completely butchered your last name. I am so sorry.
Don't worry.
So listeners, check that out. Take advantage of that. It's time, Robert, for the final parting words of wisdom. What do you have for us? You've already given us some great inspiration, some great stories.
Well, something that I would like to tell people that I feel the message doesn't come out enough, because we're in the era of the grind. We're in the era of the hustle and the side hustle and a second side hustle, if you can put on top of that, right? So that's where we are right now. And so I would just like to invite people to do an analysis of their life and make sure that everything they do, they actually enjoy. Because at the end of the day, you do not have a second life, right? You may have reincarnation, But guess what? If reincarnation is real, either way, you don't remember your past life. So as far as you're concerned, you only have this one, right? And, you know, if you have a life after that in, you know, heaven or whatever, right? Again, as far as you're concerned, you don't know. So this is the only life right now that you can actually be 100% sure of. So for this one opportunity, this one blessing that you were given, make sure that you do things that you actually enjoy. And if you do not enjoy it, stop doing them or find a way to do them differently so that you actually enjoy it, right? I cannot tell you how many people are working their little butts off and they're unhappy like crazy because they're not doing things. Everything they do takes energy from them, or more than half of the things they do takes energy from them. By the end of the day, they're depleted. They cannot spend time with their wife. They cannot spend time with their spouse or their children or anything. Like, it's literally, they are depleted at the end of the day. And so this is why, because it's taking away so much of their energy because they're not working in their core genius. You will notice that whenever you're working in your core genius and you enjoy what you do, you get energy.
Yes.
That's the best way. That's the best North Star I can give you. If you're getting energy from a conversation, you should talk to that person more often. If you're getting energy from a certain type of work, you should do that type of work more often. If you're depleted by someone very often, you should probably speak to them less. If you do something that depletes you, you should probably do that less and delegate it to someone that enjoys it and gets energy from it, right? And so this would be my recommendation to anyone listening, right? If you can work within your core genius, it will feel easy. Life will feel easy. You will be happy. Everyone around you will enjoy you more, right? Including your family, your loved ones, and so on and so forth. And the world will simply be a better place. This is what I recommend everyone do.
I love this. Words of wisdom. Thank you so much. Listeners, if you loved this interview with Robert as much as I did, share it out to the world with a friend, whoever, get it out there. And please let us know what you think. We love those testimonials. Those are a blast. Thank you so much for that. And thank you, Robert. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you so much.